Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome aboard the Turkish Airlines podcast channel. Are you ready for a new adventure?
Merhaba, passengers. This is your captain speaking. Welcome aboard the inaugural episode of the Widen Your World podcast, part of the Turkish Airlines series.
Plan on flying? It's time to upgrade to a real ID. Because in order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID, or you'll need another acceptable form of identification. So don't wait. Find out how to get your real ID at tsa.gov/real ID. That's tsa.gov/real ID, or visit your local DMV, and then you'll be cleared for takeoff.
Welcome to the Sonic Screwcast. We are the Lorehounds, your guides to all of time and space. I'm John.
And I'm Alicia, and this is our coverage of the BBC and Disney Plus series Doctor Who.
In this episode, we'll be discussing Season 1, Episode 9, titled Empire of Death.
And as much as we enjoy discussing this show together, we also want to hear from you. So please send any of your thoughts to TARDIS@thelorehounds.com or visit our website at thelorehounds.com/contact. And you can use the contact form there or even use the built-in voicemail feature. Please also do check out our Discord server where we're talking about Doctor Who and everything else going on right now in this hot lore summer. There we go. You'll find the links in the show notes below.
Also, please consider subscribing to us on Supercast or Patreon for as little as $3 a month. You get ad-free episodes and much more. And it is a great way to help us make more timey-wimey podcasts and escape SuTech. So I guess this is our spoiler warning, everything that's ever happened in Doctor Who, forever and ever, amen.
Yes, forevermore.
So this is the season finale of New Who, of the first season of New Who. What did you think, Alicia, of the episode and the season as a whole? Because quite frankly, we're too busy right now to do a separate season wrap up.
Right. I definitely have a higher opinion of the season of, as a whole than of the episode. And it's not that I have a poor opinion of the episode. It's just, I thought it was a particularly strong season, but I thought that the strongest set of episodes were the ones, you know, basically between The Devil's Chord and Rogue. that was a strong stretch of episodes.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think that overall, I think this is true of all of RTD's original run too, is that RTD's really good at individual episodes and short arcs, and I think falls a little bit flat when it comes to wrapping up a big story arc.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows? He could get better.
But speaking of the god of music, Maestro, I have to give a shout out to Murray Gold, who's a composer for Doctor Who, and you know, he was actually, we saw him on screen episode. Yeah, The Devil's Chord. He was playing the piano. But I just really noticed, especially in this last episode, how much his score set the tone for the episode, you know, like my favorite moments were really defined by these quiet visuals, impressive visuals, like the Doctor hanging out the TARDIS in space with his score. So I just, wanted to recognize that.
Absolutely. It's truly something that unless you're like really into the industry, it often goes unnoticed. Mm-hmm. But because when it's done right, it does go unnoticed, right? Because it just makes you feel something without it being jarring. So yeah, I mean, Murray Gold has always been the gold standard, if you will.
Ha ha ha.
Of Doctor
he has a good
Who
name
music.
For this work.
It's true. It's true. Yeah, I was so thrilled to hear the original Sutek voice, and you could hear it, right? Mm-hmm. When you go back to the old one, he has a similar voice. He sounds a little older now. Obviously, it's been how many years? 50 years?
I think they said 47 or something.
47. Okay. And so, yeah, I mean, he's got a tremendous voice. I'm so glad that they got him back because he really sounded like this ancient god who's just so pissed at the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Did a really great job capturing that. It felt like a debate between two points of view that you might read in, like, I don't know, a biblical passage, the Quran, you know, all these things that have these debates of opinions within them. The god of life versus the god of death, it felt like.
Right.
And that
right.
was awesome.
Well, that seemed to be the theme. The Doctor even said, after Sutek said, "Everything living thing is an abomination," the Doctor said, "I damn you, Sutek, in the name of life itself." So, and I noticed there's a lot of symbolism for the Doctor said, "I pride myself in being better than you. If you're death, I'm life. You turned me into this. I'm the one who brings death. You win." And that's how he gets rid of Sutek. But do you think this God of Life thing is intentional with the whole regeneration aspect of the Doctor and immortality?
Yep. I'm still in the camp of, if we're going with the Timeless Child thing, then the mm-hmm. Doctor is some kind of member of a pantheon. I think the Doctor is part of the pantheon and is
this pantheon?
The God of Life.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Do you agree, as someone who watched Pyramids of Mars, the Doctor mm-hmm. called Sutek, was like, "Oh, it's Sutek. You were the greatest enemy I ever fought." Does that strike true to you as someone who watched that episode? Did that feel like more monumental than other enemies?
Here's the problem is that, and Marilyn will comment on this later, is that there is a standard Doctor Who formula of, "I don't know how I could possibly beat this enemy. Okay, I figured out the trick that's going to beat this enemy." And that's just part of the conceit of the show that you just have to go with, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with them just throwing that phrase around. "You're the toughest enemy I've ever faced," as long as they don't do it too often. One thing that I will say that may make Sutek a more formidable adversary than most is that he did effectively control the Doctor, mind control the Doctor. And I don't think we've seen that very often. I think there was one Matt Smith thing where the Cybermen kind of mind control them, right? But that was less full, and they didn't have to, you know, they didn't have to attach anything to the Doctor to control him when it's Sutek, because the Sutek just does it through his spirit mind control powers.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's sort of because we think of the Doctor as being a clever man, you know, a mm-hmm. brain above all else. Then anyone who can best the Doctor in that regard, like with mental prowess, that does make them extra scary because that's kind of his strength.
Right, and like you said, it's his strength, and the way he wins is often outsmarting. If he doesn't have his mind, he has no power at all, in my opinion. He doesn't have super strength. He doesn't have super agility or anything like that.
Exactly.
He doesn't have any superpowers other than being clever.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Well, he can regenerate, but you know what I mean. In in his non-regenerative state, he does not have any superpowers.
Right.
Anyway, that's my shtick. I think it's fine to call him the a formidable adversary, at least. And so I've split this episode up into about five main plot points. And so the first one is pretty obvious. You know, Sutek unleashes his dust of death everywhere the Doctor has ever landed, the TARDIS since the Tom Baker era. And I just want to bring in a comment that the Doctor says later, which is, "I brought this. I traveled to all these places because it was fun."
Hmm.
I mean, I don't know how you feel, but that's the Doctor selling himself short. He didn't just go there because it was fun.
Right. No, he
landed
he
there because it was fun.
Yeah, right. And then something always happens.
Right.
But then you kind of have to wonder, I always bring up the Wheel of Time, but you know who I am. but it just reminds me of, like, you know, he goes somewhere. He's like, "Let's go on vacation." And then it's like there's a bubble of evil. Just, because he's Tavarin.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
he and, is and an important being. Yeah. Yeah. It's like trouble comes to him. It's just drawn to him like gravity.
Well, I'll have you know that David and I talked about the Wheel of Time on last night's House of the Dragon pod.
Oh, awesome. Can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, yeah. It's a similar thing to what the doctor said to Kate when she asked, why don't you go see your granddaughter? And he's like, well, I bring pain wherever I go.
Yeah.
No, you actually go and find pain and alleviate it.
Yeah, I agree. I'm frustrated with him about the granddaughter thing. Like, I think it's lame that at the end of this episode, he says to Ruby as she's saying her goodbyes, which got me for a minute. I'm like, wait, she is coming back, right? No, she is coming back.
100%. I said on the Discord, I mean, she's as gone as David Tennant.
Yeah, no, it's confirmed in the Doctor Who Unleashed episode too. But at first they're like, oh, and the goodbyes. I was like, what is going on? And then he's like, oh yeah, but she's definitely coming back next season. Like, okay, well, fine. But just like he is basically placing her above his granddaughter. I'm like, you just met this girl, you know, why? I just think he's been terrible to his granddaughter. And if his granddaughter does turn out to be a villain, then I understand.
Yeah. And he also, I think I mentioned this before, but he promised his granddaughter he would come back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He locked her out of the TARDIS.
And oh, my God.
I promise I'll come back one day. Yeah. And
this
she's
is
like,
super villain behavior.
Yeah, I know. He left her stranded. Also, by the way, stranded after a Dalek invasion of Earth. And they did beat the Daleks, but like the Earth is destroyed from all their activities. And he's like, oh, but she's in love with a guy she met 2 days ago. So
right.
I'm going to leave her here. She's better off here. It was very 1960s writing. That's all I'll say.
Well, that's why he's choosing someone he met 2 days ago. I mean, fine. Right. I know he and Ruby have been together longer, but. But yeah, I thought that I really liked the opening sequence of this. You know, just the growing dread where you realize like guns and lasers do nothing but pause. I thought Kate's death was really sad, although at the same time, it was the moment that I knew the whole thing was going to be reversed, especially when, you know, although the other, I was like, oh, Rose is gone. Oh, Carla's gone. Yeah, no, this is.
Right, right.
I thought Kate's death was really well played, but I didn't understand. I have to hope birds will sing again. There will be birds. That must be a reference to something that I don't know or remember.
I don't know either. I couldn't. Okay. I just thought it was a weird line, but maybe you're right. Maybe that would make a lot more sense to me if it is a reference to something. And there were certainly a ton of references to Classic Who in this episode. I mean, that whole, let's get into that next scene just to talk more about it. The Doctor, Ruby, and Mel escape on an imagined TARDIS, eventually finding a single surviving woman on a desolate planet. The Doctor uses a spoon to ground the TARDIS / time window fusion into a real memory, allowing Ruby to see Roger Ap Gwilym. The Doctor and Ruby determine they must go to Gwilym's time and search the mandatory DNA testing results for the name of Ruby's mom, which is sought by both Ruby and Sutek. So I kind of glossed over the Kate scene there, but there's so many trinkets within the TARDIS, and I recognize some of them because I've watched some of Classic Who, but I certainly didn't recognize all. And you could see Mel picking things up with such admiration and nostalgia.
Yeah.
Great stuff. But
is it called, I couldn't tell if they were calling it the Remember TARDIS or the Remembered TARDIS.
I think it was Remembered.
Okay. I guess that makes sense, but I kind of like Remember TARDIS is cute. It's the new member berries.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, it was really fun to see like Tom Baker's scarf was in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's probably the most iconic item in all of Doctor Who after the sonic screwdriver,
right?
And the TARDIS, right. Obviously.
Yeah, it was a nice Easter egg trove that I couldn't even begin to mine.
Right,
but I think it was a lot of fun. It was held together by hopes and wishes and luck. It reminded me of the way he talks about the language of ropes in the Christmas special, which I liked. Mm-hmm. And I thought there was some beautiful Davies poetry in here. Like, if time is a memory, the memory is a time machine.
Yeah, that was really nice. I think something that Davies is really good at is writing a very sing-songy dialogue.
Yeah.
A very poetic dialogue, and here we have that. We've got I don't want to go kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah. The other line that I really liked was, I mean, this is from a little later, but it says, somewhere out there in the desolate hollows of the universe, they are hiding in the winds and the wilds.
Mm.
Sounds like the beginning of a bedtime story.
Yeah.
Where the wild things are.
So can I ask you, Mel, obviously, you didn't watch her run. I haven't even watched her run yet. But do you think that they utilized her well in this? Because one of the things about Mel is that her actor, I can't remember it off the top of my head, I'm very sorry. Her actor said, I took that role because Mel was described as a computer programmer and I wanted young girls to see, you know, a woman in that role in the 1970s, 1980s. And then she didn't touch a computer once in her whole original run. And she finally did here.
Right. And no, I don't even remember her touching a computer in this. So that's not what I would. Yeah.
I do think she expressed some mental fortitude and some intelligence here. And that is at least a step up.
Well, so I haven't watched I haven't watched Pyramids of Mars and stuff, but I like the fact that she was back to continue her storyline. And I know her importance because people like my friend Simon, who we talked to in the...
She's not in Pyramids of Mars.
Oh, she's not? That's not her?
No, that's Sarah Jane Smith.
Oh, right. Okay.
Don't get added. I'm saving you here.
Well, yeah. No, I freely admit I have not watched that stuff. But anyway, I do know that...
She was a companion of the late 6th and early 7th Doctor.
Okay. Well, I do know Mel is like one of the important ones people get really excited about. And I liked her line, there's nothing I can do here except to fight. But then, when they made her like be possessed, that felt like a little bit of a disservice.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, because I did enjoy that she was able to resist Sutek longer than most.
Why wouldn't they want to possess Ruby then she's the one with the secret that he wants? I love, by the way, that like Sutek just kept them alive because he needed the tea, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think like, to possess someone, he needs to... Well, no, actually, it's not true that he needs to kill somebody.
No, he said it was just dead cells was enough.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a good question. Maybe because she needed the knowledge of Ruby. Like Ruby was the one with the weird snow thing. Ruby was the one able to conjure the memory.
Right. But he couldn't just be like possess her and make her say things or something or take her memory.
I don't know. There's no rule.
Okay, I don't know. That's true. I gotta stop doing that. Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm.
This is not the Wheel of Time. You're not going to make it fit together. Just accept.
So, yeah. Okay.
Anyway, I enjoyed that. I think it looked like the actor was having a really fun time in like the Sutek Death Warrior makeup.
Mm-hmm.
You could tell she was having a blast doing this. I think, you know, she seems to have been disappointed with her original Who run, and I'm glad that she was able to come back and feel like she got a real shot this time. I mean, she was in Doctor Who during its decline. Like the Seventh Doctor was the decline era.
Okay. Yeah.
That's right before it was canceled. Executives at the BBC didn't really like it. And she also was basically known for screaming really well. Like that was her thing. She just had a lot of screams. She didn't have a lot of like poignant dialogue or anything like that. So finally we have her getting lines like, there's nothing we can do except fight.
Right.
I just think this is a great thing that RTD is doing. And I hope he does that with more older companions. A lot of older companions are still alive. I mean, we saw that in The Power of the Doctor. They had their little support group.
Mm-hmm.
We even have Ian, the companion of one of the first companions of the first Doctor. He's still alive.
Yeah. No, I think that's great. And it's, because it doesn't, you know, I've never been bothered by them bringing in anything from, because the entire show is built on decades of TV that I didn't watch. And maybe someday I'll do what you're doing, but I still think it's a lot of fun to have these past things show up, and it makes me more likely to want to watch the older episodes.
Yeah, and it makes it feel more lived in, right? That there is a history, that the Doctor doesn't just forget about older people.
Right. Exactly.
Anyway, I'm enjoying Mel. That was my main point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
did you like this whole Williams thing and the 73 yards callback? What's going on with that?
Well, I mean, that seems to be an unfinished thing that they're dangling, you know, because now they've mentioned a couple times. So now we know the perception filter of the TARDIS is exactly 66.7 meters, which they said something last episode. They said something was in a shed that distance away, which immediately like, okay, that's 73 yards. So they're teasing us, I think, that this is not this, you know, we don't have all the answers to that. This is not over. We have a hint what might be involved, but yeah, we still also don't know like about the snow and the song that comes with Ruby. And just the fact that this Roger Aquilium keeps coming back. I have a feeling that's going to turn up again. And also because of the actor, what's his name? Arnuren Barnard, something like that.
Oh, I don't speak Welsh. I don't do that.
He was in 1899, and anyway, he's a like a higher profile actor that I feel like they would want to build a bigger character around him. Like he'll be back again, and I feel like this plot point about DNA testing being compulsory then could be convenient in the future too.
I agree with that. I think there's a lot of unresolved questions around Ruby, and I mean not just the snow and the song, but why was her mother wearing Damon's murder cloak? Why did she point? So here's the thing. Not just why did she point, but why did she not point originally, but when the doctor's memory changed in Space
Babies? Right, then she pointed.
Right. That does not make sense if she's just a normal person. Mm-hmm. And one theory I've seen pushed around is, you know, I mentioned earlier, like maybe there's a storyteller going on, a member of the Pantheon. And Mrs. Flood is increasingly looking like that character. I mean, look at the way she talks at the end of the episode. She's like, well, his tale ends in tragedy. And she speaks to the, she breaks the fourth wall. I think she very well could be the storyteller. And maybe she felt like it was time to wrap up Ruby's story. So she wrote her mother and father. And they didn't exist before that.
Oh, maybe. She did. She said to Cherry right before. So we found out she's definitely not with Sutek, because Sutek also made her crumble with the dust of death. But she said to Cherry, do you believe in the power of prayers? Then tell your maker, I will come to storm down his gates of gold and seize his kingdom in my true name. And then she says, sorry, you tiny little human, it ends like this. I had such plans. So, something she's going to challenge God. And there's a true name, which we need to know. And there were such plans.
Yeah, very and earthsy, but the true name.
And then Cherry did not tell her daughter or anyone else that, like, oh, by the way, Mrs. Flood was real weird earlier before, but I guess she was distracted by the whole we all died and came back thing, maybe.
It could be that, or it could be that, well, here's one thing. Was it, like, undone? Like, were they not just reconstituted, but did it undo the fact that they were dusted?
I mean, they were still, when they came out of the dust, they were in the same position they went into the dust, you know, like cradled together. So that was after she said all that stuff.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. I accept it. Yeah, that's a great question. That's a great question. Maybe she said something, but they were like, oh, Grandma Cherry, you had the wrong tea. Don't worry about it.
Right. I told you not the tea on the top shelf.
Acting like that? Oh, she's so sweet. Don't worry about her. Yeah.
Maybe she'll bring it up later. Maybe, you know, to be fair, maybe she was just distracted by like, oh, the whole world ended and now it unended. You know, that's the whole thing. What did you think about people being transported by Harbinger lever?
By Harbinger lever?
Yeah, at one point the Harbinger just like flicked a lever and people were transported outside the TARDIS to come back to headquarters.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Okay. All right.
I don't know how that would work. I mean, I did just finish a Classic Who thing where the Doctor takes the whole console out of the TARDIS and then just transports people in the vicinity.
Okay. So, all right. That's precedent.
Yeah. I think that's possible. There's like a range of it. It doesn't have to be inside the TARDIS.
Okay.
Anyway, so let's move on to... Oh, and actually, I want to talk about the Spoon Lady. How sad was that?
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if she might, if we might see her again, just because they gave us so many details about her, you know, like her daughters, Brindle D. She's on this Agua Santia planet. Yeah, I don't know if it just felt, it felt, I thought at first, I thought she was going to be Ruby's mother, but then if she, her daughter's named Brindle D, fine. But it just felt like the way they introduced her was with portents. And then the way they went back to her at the end, which, you know, makes sense to wrap it up, but it just felt like someone we might see again.
Yeah. And I did look it up. It's not a planet that's previously visited by the doctor.
And also the thing about remembering an opera house, like that seems significant. Like I remember an opera house. So I wonder if we're going to go back and they're going to. Yeah. Ooh, could be.
Like, I don't know.
Got any metal? Metal's precious. I don't know. Just, yeah, I keep thinking about her dialogue.
Yeah, it was very oddly specific. You're right. But then again, we've dropped the Mavity thing. So who knows?
Well, maybe. Have we? They didn't say gravity, did they?
I think they said gravity at one point this season.
They've said Mavity at least once this season. I think a couple times. So I don't think they've dropped it.
I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. Maybe they're just avoiding it because they're trying to make you forget about it. You know, I've seen some criticism of this where people said that rather than twists, they felt like they were a little bit betrayed by this ending, where it just felt like they sidestepped so many of the questions raised.
Right.
I don't know. I'm willing to wait till Christmas and to season two to see how those questions are answered. I don't think, look, if RTD really does like never answer the why does it snow around Ruby, then that's stupid. I'll just say it.
Yeah.
But I don't think that we can close the door on that yet.
No, it seems like the story isn't over. And the fact that like Mrs. Flood was showed up looking like the Snow Queen with snow. Yeah, that feels like we're going to find out more at Christmas.
Right. All right, let's move on to Mel. She's taken over by Sutek and lures the group back to her boss. Ruby and the Doctor trick Sutek into letting Ruby close enough to leash him onto the TARDIS. The Doctor drags Sutek through the time vortex, declaring himself life and restoring the lives Sutek took throughout time. We kind of talked about this, but I really do love that he says, you've made me the one who brings death, right? Because life brings death. That's
right.
The circle of life. Don't sue me, Disney.
It's like the Bhagavad Vita. I am become the bringer of, what is it? Famous Oppenheimer quote. It's, yeah. Anyway, I am become death, destroyer of life.
But he's life bringer of death. So they're opposites, right?
Right. But then does that mean that if you kill death, doesn't that mean that people become immortal, which has a lot of problems?
No, people have been talking about this. Death existed while Sutek was chained up too. While Sutek was completely unable
to use
their powers
at all. But Sutek was alive. So I guess, but Sutek's not dead. We just saw Sutek just disappear off into the vortex again.
Also, Sutek isn't really a god in the traditional sense. That the Osirians were presented as aliens in Pyramids of Mars. They're just really, really powerful aliens.
Right. Right,
that
exactly.
Just fought amongst each other.
But now it's the Pantheon, so.
I don't know.
It's been retconned.
Again, what are the rules?
Whatever Russell says.
Right, right.
But also, yeah, the rules also for coming back. Like, I had to wonder, I was like, well, didn't planes crash when everyone suddenly turned to dust? And it just seems like some people would stay dead. But yeah, I've got to stop. I don't know. I think this was the problem with this episode for me, is normally with Doctor Who, I'm able to just disengage that part of my brain because it's not about that, you know, it's about, I'm thinking about the metaphor, about the story. And for this, it was like the reveal, like, oh, here's all the details that I've been hiding. And then I'm like, well, but these pieces of this puzzle aren't fitting together for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you on that one. I was able to turn my brain off. I was, again, a little bit disappointed that certain questions were sidestepped, but at the same time, again, I'm willing to give RTD the benefit of the doubt. I just wish, I think some of these were a one-season arc. I think the snow thing is a one-season arc. I don't think that has the legs to go to a second season. So, again, minor critiques. Overall, a really enjoyable season. I don't think that this episode really closed it out satisfactorily.
Right. Yeah, I think that's the thing, is it's also just because I feel like the especially the episodes leading up to this were so strong that I was like, oh, wah, wah.
Right. Yeah, and this season was stronger than any of the 13th Doctor seasons. Like, yeah. I'll say that right away. Like, the highs of this season. And that's, but again, that's always been RTD, right? He's always had high highs and low lows.
Yeah.
Guy has bummer episodes. I mean.
Yeah. But Doctor Who Unleashed, Davies said that he's been thinking about Sutekh hanging on to the TARDIS ever since the Pyramids of Mars aired 48 years ago. So I love for him that he got to bring that to life. And I love this whole Pantheon thing that they've set up this season. And I think they've set up a lot of great things. It just didn't maybe deliver the answers that we were hoping for. And I don't mind the happy ending, you know?
Yeah.
We'll see.
Did you see the original effect for Sutekh coming through the portal?
Yes.
Because they redid that.
Yeah.
It looks much worse in the original.
Right.
It doesn't look great, honestly, how it is now, because he's just like motionless moving.
Uh-huh.
But it looks much better than it did. I'll say that.
Okay. I do think, by the way, about the mother reveal that it reminded me of, you know, oh, I'm going to spoil sequel trilogy Star Wars now. It reminded me of the Rey reveal, you know, the one that Rian Johnson tried to do.
It's not the fake reveal.
Yeah, it's not. I think he would have kept it that way if it were up to him, right? If he got to do the third movie. But that, yeah, that Rey's parents were nobodies. And that reveal, I liked the idea of it in The Last Jedi, but it didn't necessarily hit for me because I was also like, oh, I don't know. It felt like a fake out to me at the time. So this one, it might actually also be a fake out, but it felt like I just liked how it was done better than the Rey reveal is what I'm trying to say. I liked the idea of, you know, just pointing out that things are important because we invest significance in them. Like, I always think about people are like, oh, why is it always the protagonist survives because the protagonist has plot armor? But another way of approaching it is to say the only reason we're telling this story is because the protagonist survives.
Right. Yeah, I think that's fair.
So I like.
Yeah. And I agree with you. It was better done than the Rey reveal. I also am thinking that. Again, I'm on team. These are artificially created humans, just like Susan Twist.
Yeah. Why wouldn't they find her in Boom when they were testing Ruby's DNA? And they're like, no one found.
Yeah. That's a good question. Again, maybe they didn't exist. Maybe Mrs. Flood was like, yeah, all right, I'll give her a mom and dad now. She's a nice girl.
Yeah. Yeah. I am coming to that, like, where we have to remember if the answers don't seem satisfactory and we know there's more coming, then maybe that's why, because we don't have all the answers yet.
Yeah. All right.
I do wonder if, you know, since there's been some commentary about the adoption story and, you know, the Ruby searching for her mom and now, her mom didn't want to find her. But then when Ruby found her mom was like, oh, I'm so glad, actually.
Right.
And I can imagine that there'd be people out there who are like, no, I don't want kids to think that.
Well, all right. So I have to bring in personal experience now because I am someone who is the product of sperm donation. Mm-hmm. And I discovered that in my 20s. And I haven't actually spoken to my donor, but I've spoken to his kid.
Right.
And we actually have a good relationship, me and my sister. But, you know, I discovered these people through technology that did not exist at the time of the donation, right? Discovered them through 23andMe. These kinds of consumer DNA testing kits did not exist, were not widespread until recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I just would not have been able to find these people without that. Is it unfair for me to reach out to people just because that technology didn't exist at the time? I don't think so. I think people choices. I think people make their choices and there are consequences to those choices, such as human life. And, you know, he's not, you know, these people aren't obligated to have relationships with us.
Right.
But I don't think we're in the wrong for reaching out.
No, and I didn't mean to suggest that if it came across that way.
No. I'm actually combating the doctor who goes, well, you found you found them through DNA testing with time travel. And I'm like, okay, but you met her through time travel, right? Like if the doctor dismissed things because you did it through time travel, then the whole series wouldn't exist.
Right. He basically started stalking her because some goblins were, and he wanted to know what was up.
Right. And so I think that this was, and I think this was good writing, actually, as much as I disagree with the doctor there. I think it was good writing because it showed how emotionally repressed he is, that he assumes that it's better to leave people alone than it is to forge relationship. And Ruby says, screw that. She's right there. Yeah. I'm going to go say hi to her. And and everyone's happy with it, right? Like relationship was formed and a positive impact happened. And I wonder if the doctor is going to think about that or discuss it more with Ruby, because we know she's coming back, or discuss it more with Ruby and decide, okay, maybe I should go see Susan. She doesn't have to come with me, but maybe I should go visit her.
Well, it feels like with all the attention she got this season, they have to address that next season. They have to do something on that front.
If they don't, that's just embarrassing. Don't do that. Don't do that, RPD. Yeah. Don't tease us like that.
And apparently on Doctor Who Unleashed, RTD said that Ruby's dad will also show up next season. The one that they found at the end of this episode.
I'm into it. I'm into it.
So mystery definitely not over.
Absolutely.
So you were saying, by the way, about Nicola Coughlan, the you know, the actress from Bridgerton and from what's it called, Dairy Girls.
Dairy Girls,
So now they showed in the preview she's in the Christmas special.
Oh, I haven't seen the preview. That's cool. I love her. I think she's so funny.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like a preview. They just kind of actually showed her showing up for filming, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And you're teasing a unit spinoff here in the notes?
Well, yeah, I was just asking, like, because this is something that's been long rumored, and the fact that we spent two episodes here. And now, yeah, I love that Kate will just, like, hire anyone who shows up except Carla, apparently. So now Susan Twist, or sorry, Susan, what's her name in the show? Not TARDIS.
She is Susan Twist, right?
But that's her real name. That's the actress's
name. Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. I can't remember now.
No, Susan something. She's now working for UNIT. But yeah, would you want to watch a UNIT spinoff if it happened with the characters that we saw in like the last two episodes, basically, I guess?
I'm always of the opinion that anything can be done well. Like I was skeptical of, I'm often skeptical of a spinoff, but then they turn out well. I'm okay with it. If you want to do it, then go ahead. I'm not like super clamoring for it, but I'd definitely watch it. Oh, and she's Susan Triad, by the way.
Susan Triad. Okay, there we go. Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm the same. I'm like, if you want to do a spinoff, that's not necessarily the first thing I would personally choose, but if you're going to put it on the air, I will be watching it.
Yeah, definitely. I will watch anything Hooniverse, as they're calling it on the BBC stuff now.
Yeah, well, we got to do the Sarah Jane Adventures and the Eighth Doctor movie.
I want to watch the Eighth Doctor movie. I don't know if I want to do Sarah Jane Adventures.
Why?
It looks pretty bad. From what I've seen of it, I'm like, oh boy, the effects are not there.
There are so many more seasons than I thought.
Oh boy. All right. Well, why don't we bring in the other thoughts of people?
Okay.
If you want to send in feedback, you can write in to TARDIS@thelorehounds.com. You can go to thelorehounds.com and leave a voicemail or contact form entry, or you could just tag us on the Discord, like many people did. We've got three voicemails, two from the same person, from your sister.
Yeah, so we've got voicemails from on the both ends of the spectrum. So we've got my sister's a new Whovian. For those who didn't listen to our breakdown of the first three episodes of the season, this is her like very first exposure to Doctor Who. So she's checking in on, just what did she think of the season, and is she going to keep going?
Cool. Here we go.
Hi, Alicia and John. Alicia's sister Ashley here, and I'm calling to give an update on my thoughts on Doctor Who. As a complete newbie who has seen no Doctor Who before this current season, with the 15th Doctor. So I had previously left a message after watching only the Christmas special, and I mentioned in it that my expectations were shifted with that episode because I understood that it was meant to be a little more of a silly show, more lighthearted than I was expecting originally going into it. However, that did not prepare me, I felt, for Space Babies. I did not like that episode. I found it really dumb. I didn't like the baby's CGI talking, and the snot was gross. I thought the farting solution was stupid. It just all felt really kind of immature, and I was a bit disappointed because I was thinking, I don't think I'm going to like this show. I think it's too goofy for me, and maybe I would have appreciated the humor more if I had gotten into it when I was younger. I don't know if that would have made a difference, but I was not feeling very appreciative of the show with episode one. That being said, the next episode, The Devil's Chord, got me right into it. I thought that villain, the actor who played that villain, did a phenomenal job. Just really a memorable villain. With the behavior and the faces they made. And I was really excited because it also took a bit of a darker turn. It was a little eerier, which especially grew as the season went on. It was still lighthearted and fun, which I realized is definitely a part of it from what I'm seeing and what I hear. But I was happy that there were more serious episodes, a lot of serious or more somber moments, some pretty scary stuff throughout, or scary and even intense situations that they got themselves in. So overall, I did like it. It felt like a bit of a roller coaster with a lot of different emotions packed in. But I felt that especially Nshuti did a really great job as the doctor. I have nothing to compare it to. So I just appreciate how he played the role currently. I thought he put a lot of emotion behind it, and not just because he cried every episode. But he really felt captivating to me and made me want to watch him and his reactions and to kind of experience his journeys along with him. So I think my favorite episode was 73 Yards. It felt different from the rest of them, and I liked the uniqueness of it. It was a little weird that the doctor wasn't really in most of it, but it did feel like a interesting, like a sidestep and then fast forwarding through someone's life of almost like what it would be like without him. Although I don't know that he'll always be in her life, but it also had a bit of a haunting horror theme to it with the woman always there and Ruby not understanding why till the end. And I thought it was a really unique way that she used that, I don't know how to, like, not stationary, but that ever present but ever far,
semper distant
kind of haunt, as a benefit, you know, with the Prime Minister and everything. So anyway, I thought it was really well done. I also thought it had really pretty scenery, but as I think Alicia's mentioned, our family is Welsh, so I think I'm drawn to, some part of me is drawn to that when I see it. The biggest things I learned about the Doctor and the show, first off, I'll say that I'm correcting myself from my last recording. I understand now that he travels in a police box, not a phone booth. Although, is a police box not just a phone booth for police? I actually still don't Touché. Know exactly what they are. So there's that. But I learned that he's a Time Lord. He's definitely not a doctor of any sort. And that I guess he's aware of his previous existences. Like, it's all the same person, I understand, but he seemed to, you know, have his memories about him, which I guess I wasn't sure going into it, if like different actors meant somehow he had been reborn into a new soul and maybe or maybe not had his memories, but that seemed confirmed that he does. The show definitely seems whimsical, which I think was a theme throughout, in which I know my fiance Jose mentioned that he had heard that about it going into it, so he had slightly different expectations than I did, which I think helped him. He enjoyed the show as well. I'm a little curious about Unit. I feel like I didn't get a huge grasp of their role, or at least how well they know the Doctor, and maybe I could know more about a little bit of their history together and why he seemed to really care about them in the last couple episodes more than I realized he would when he ran into them. I don't know. They seemed like a bigger deal to him than the show made it seem. So I'm curious about that. That being said, I know Alicia asked if there was a spinoff, would I watch it, about Unit? And I would say right now, no, only because I just got into this world of Doctor Who, and I feel like that's something that I may appreciate more once I have a bigger understanding of the whole universe. I think that Unit will probably introduce a bunch of different, you know, phenomenon that I think I would appreciate more if I knew what types of things the Doctor had gotten involved with and what types of creatures and beings he's experienced in the past, because I have a feeling that would strengthen the story and my connection to it. So I don't think I'd watch that right now, but if I keep watching Doctor Who, if I happen to go back to past Whos, then I could see myself branching out into more of this universe, because it is fun. And I can see how they leave it so open that they can change anything at any time, it seems like, especially from what I've heard and in part from listening to your podcast. But I am excited to see the next season. I'm glad to hear they've already filmed it, and I will definitely be watching. I hope to see more of Rogue, because I really enjoyed that little romance, and it seemed very passionate and intense, and I'd love to see if there's anything more there, especially because it seemed like it left off with like a, you know, it was like, come find me. So I hope he finds him. And I look forward to the variety of it all, and how each episode, it's not like the same repeated structure of the adventures they go on. It seems like each one is pretty unique in its own way. And I also really like the uniqueness of the villains. And so I look forward to seeing what else they can come up with that's, you know, something I would never think of, like with Maestro using music and, you know, ruining the world by stealing all the music. So thank you, Alicia, for suggesting that I watch this show. I really appreciate you always get me to read and watch the good stuff. I don't know where I'd be without you. So thank you very much. And thank you to both of you for this podcast. This has been my intro into Lorehounds, and I am loving listening to you. So I look forward to what's more to come. And that's all I got. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Well, your sister's a lovely person. That was a very nice voicemail. And I also will say, I think if you two had a podcast together, it would be 4 hours long each episode. I could see you two bouncing off each other.
Yeah, we have thoughts. Well, I mean, we did the one for the Fall of the House of Usher, and I think that was close to three. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's great content though, and I really appreciate her writing. And I know she had a second voicemail. So have you listened to both already?
Yes.
Are they related enough where I should play this before we respond in full?
I think it's a different concept. I actually forget what was in this.
Okay.
One.
All right. Yeah. All right. So let's respond to this. I'm glad that we could help onboard you, because yeah, it's very important to know, like, the Doctor's face changes and he retains the memories, but he has maybe a different personality. And what else was it? The police box. That's a funny distinction. I like that she was like, oh, well, isn't it just a telephone box for police?
I mean, isn't it though?
Yeah, it is. It's just you can only call one person.
Right.
I think that's how
that's
works.
Why they know, didn't Brits. Implement them in the US, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. They were like, this seems like a waste of taxpayer money.
Three digits, yeah.
Right. Any other thoughts on her first voicemail?
I mean, I was just thinking as she was speaking about spinoffs that like Torchwood is the one that I think she would like, but then, you know, she has to go back and watch the Jack Harkness introduction on Doctor Who. So I did tell her, I said the next thing, you know, she should go watch after this if she feels like it is the 60th anniversary special, because that's also on Disney and, you know, and okay, it ties directly into with the Toymaker and everything. Neil Patrick Harris, yeah.
I think that's a good suggestion. The 60th, and then if she's still liking it, I would say just go back to Eccleston and start there.
Right, yeah.
You know, something that she mentioned was she's curious about the relationship with the unit and the history. It's funny because I saw a Reddit post that I agree with, which is I miss the doctor's contentious relationship with unit. And what I mean by that is the doctor in the third doctor era, where he really starts working with unit more, he is like frenemies with the brigadier, right? Like he's like, he loves the guy and the guys and they're loyal to each other. But he also like hates him as a boss. You could tell he's like constantly threatening to quit. The whole thing is his TARDIS doesn't work because the Time Lord's disabled it. So he's constantly trying to fix his TARDIS to escape. And I love the finale of season. It's a season in Classic Who, of season 7, I think it is, where the doctor tries to go away and he's like, bye, Brigadier. This is my resignation. And then he comes back like a couple minutes later and they're like, where did you go? He's like, oh yeah, I accidentally landed on top of like the waste plant a mile away. Can you send some people to go get it for me? Fun stuff. Anyway, but I do like when the doctor is like kind of a curmudgeon and a little bit contentious with everybody. That is one thing I miss with Shuti's doctor is that I think he's so friendly with everyone that I kind of miss the doctor being a dick sometimes.
I don't know. I mean, my other favorite doctor is Matt Smith, and I would say that he wasn't a dick either. He was also like an earnest puppy, and I like that in a doctor.
Yeah, he was rude sometimes, though, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he was callous sometimes, and I don't think that Shuti is like that at all.
Okay.
And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I think it's just a different take on the doctor.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I like it. Shuti might be in contention for my favorite. It's too soon to say, but he's well on the way there.
All right. So let's listen to Ashley's other voicemail.
Okay.
So actually, that wasn't all I got because I forgot a pretty important piece of feedback, which is that I was not thrilled by the ending. Figured I would share that I was pretty disappointed by the reveal about like Ruby's mom, and then they just found her and everything was all perfect and happy. It felt really unrealistic and weird and like forced and rushed. And it also felt like it took away a lot of the appeal of the suspense leading up to this big thing. And then it was like, honestly, nothing. And I also still don't fully understand why Ruby caused snow just by thinking about this memory. So that, I felt, was a pretty weird ending. I was not surprised, though, that he said goodbye to her, because I understand that he has different companions. So I look forward to seeing the next companion and how their relationship may hopefully differs from, you know, the one he had with Ruby, because I imagine each season or each relationship will be unique. So, looking forward to that. But yeah, in the end, I was kind of bummed out by how they wrapped things up. Anyway, sorry to go out on a down note, but peace.
I don't think that you're alone, Ashley, in your disappointment with some of the mysteries. I mean, you know you're not alone if you listen to this whole podcast, because I think we were both, you and I, Alicia, were
right.
Sort of had our quibbles with it, too. I would say stick with it. I don't think this is done. Mm-hmm. And also, you weren't alone, Ashley, in not liking Space Babies. I think that was probably the lowest rated episode of the whole season for everybody. Yeah. Those who have watched Who a long time and not watched Who ever before.
Right. Well, you know who else did not like Space Babies is our friend and OG Whovian, who, you know, grew up watching it, Simon.
Oh, all right. Here we go.
Hello, Alicia. So here it is. My views of Doctor Who Series 1, or is it Series 16 or 15? I'm not even sure. Okay, so firstly, the church on Ruby Road, I guess that was part of it. The church on Ruby Road was brilliant, thoroughly entertaining, very different, a new look, a new direction. I loved it, and I think Ruby is already proving to be an absolutely fabulous companion. Space Babies, the less said about that, the better. That was pretty poor by anyone's standards. It was really not a good start to the series, I thought. The Devil's Chord. The Devil's Chord, I thought, was a masterpiece. I thought it was thought-provoking, entertaining, until the twist at the end. The musical number, for me, ruined it, but I did enjoy that episode. Boom was an absolute classic, a real return to form, unpredictable, exciting, everything that you'd want in Doctor Who, followed by 73 Yards, which was just a complete edge of the seat thriller, a kind of, it combined the genres of sci-fi, thriller, horror. It was all there. It was spooky. It didn't make much sense. The resolution didn't really make much sense, but it was brilliant. Loved it. Dot and Bubble, that was Doctor Who does, what's it called? Black Mirror. Doctor Who does Black Mirror. And yeah, it was pretty good. But you know, it's kind of, I think most Doctor Who fans will also watch watch Black Mirror, and I thought it was, yeah, pretty much a pastiche on Black Mirror, but it was still pretty entertaining. Rogue, I'd give Rogue 10 out of 10. Rogue was just, had everything. Great production values, yeah, great villains, really good. The Legend of Ruby Sunday was part one, the first episode, The Legend of Ruby Sunday, the meeting unit again, great, you know, really exciting, fabulous cliffhanger, great reveal. And finally, Empire of Death, which, great production values, as we've come to expect with this Disney Plus BBC combination. Very exciting, really enjoyed it. However, the reveal of that Ruby's mother was basically just, you know, just an average person. Oh, okay, you can never say nurses are above average people in general, but the fact that Ruby's mother wasn't Susan, wasn't an alien, was basically just there all the time, that was a letdown. But I did enjoy the resolution with the villain, with Sutek. I thought that was great. The only other thing I would say is I hope in the next series that there'll be less of the Doctor crying. You know, I think used sparingly, it has an impact, but it appears to be almost every episode he's in tears. I mean, I think, yeah, that's not ideal. But overall, if I look at this series, I thoroughly enjoyed the series overall. It's not all doom and gloom. I'm amazed at how negative Doctor Who fandom has been over the Empire of Death. People are really going to town on it. I mean, guys, I think a lot of Doctor Who fans, we've forgotten how bad it was in the John Nathan Turner era. The final few series with Sylvester McCoy as the Doctor, but even with Colin Baker as the Doctor, there are a lot of very appalling stories, tacky production values, very poor quality. So, you know, I still would say that this series is far superior to, you know, the last two or three series of old Who, and I think it's still up to the standards of new Who. Thank you very much.
So thanks for your thoughts, Simon. It was nice to hear your voice again since we chatted in the, in the 60th finale.
Year.
Yeah, a while ago.
Yeah, no, it's interesting how much he and my sister might be on opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of experience with this property, but they agreed on a lot.
Right. I totally agree with that. That's pretty funny. Yeah, I think that the weaknesses of this season are not tied to it being Doctor Who. I think they're just production issues. They're just general TV quality issues, and that's normal, and that's okay.
Yeah, it's just, some of these, I think it also just goes to show that when it works, Doctor Who is really universal. You know, it connects with people who don't know all of the decades of history.
Right, totally. All right, well, we've got a few more pieces of feedback, so let's do those quickly. Mm-hmm. We've got Arthur H. writing in about his Oklahoma reference, saying, the farmers and ranchers were feuding throughout the play. There was a barn-raising dance where the song was, "The Farmer and the Cowboy Should Be Friends."
Right.
Okay, that's fun. That's fun.
I completely forgot about that song, and my father would be ashamed of me, but yeah, sorry.
Well, thanks, Arthur. That was fun. Cabin Boy, hashtag, what?
It's a Twitter name, sorry. Yeah.
Okay, I'm just going to say Cabin Boy.
Yeah, you're going to say Cabin Boy.
Cabin Boy says, maybe it's 14th retirement misadventure is changing / adding to 15th memory. Does every minute that 14 is living add a minute to 15's memories, or does 15 remember everything that 14 is yet to do? I think the latter.
You think?
That's my opinion.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I do hope that they, I think that the bi-generation is really interesting, and I hope they don't just like sweep that under the rug and say, don't think about it. I hope they explore it a little bit and how that could complicate things.
I agree. Even if you just mention it, like it was kind of weird that they were like, oh, well, Sutek took over the TARDIS. Maybe we should try to get the one across town.
Right, exactly.
like, let's bring a helipad to the noble's house, right? Like, mm-hmm. I think that there was a better way to do that.
Yeah, if there's a world-ending event, it feels like the other doctor should be there.
Right. Well, Rex wrote in to talk about the Fobwatch because I think the subject line was actually, you know, regarding hiding, using regeneration to hide.
Right.
And Simon said, well, this is talking about the Fire Watch used by the Master in Utopia or the Ruth Doctor. So the chameleon, it's called the chameleon circuit, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So the chameleon circuit, the problem with that is that it doesn't actually change your appearance.
Mm-hmm.
It just turns you human. And like it rewrites your DNA to turn you human and it hides your memories from you. But that disguises you from yourself and from people seeking a Time Lord. It doesn't change your appearance. So I don't think that they are referring to that. I'm going to push back on that, Rex.
I'm still stuck on the previous one because, okay, so I thought about on the one hand then when the dust of death went out that, you know, the Doctor and Donna would also disintegrate because why wouldn't they? But then in terms of the TARDIS, and I was like, well, would Sutek destroy the TARDIS? But wait, is Sutek... So did Sutek hop to the new TARDIS when it bi-generated, or are there two Suteks on each TARDIS? Did Sutek bi-generate?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think Sutek, I'm going to say that Sutek had to pick a TARDIS.
Okay. And they said, I want the Doctor Who's going places. Worlds otherwise, where I can drop more Susan twists. Okay.
It's too much. All right, Marilyn... Arpukila, our favorite Tolkien scholar, writes in on the Discord, says, well, I kind of knew it from the beginning of the episode, referring to my comment as soon as Kate turned to dust. I was like, oh, yeah, we're just going to reverse this whole thing because you're just not going to leave her dead. You've put too much work into her.
Mm-hmm.
I think I said something similar to this before. Monster appears, end of the world, and the Doctor can't defeat it, eventually comes up with a way to defeat it. This was the only section that was really jazz hands for me. And all happiness is restored. Mind you, I was content that it should be this way, setting aside the similarity of the dust of death to the MCU Thanos dusting. I thought this was a fun, innovative way to reverse time and death. And it was a lovely fairy tale about a happy ending for a baby that was given up for adoption. It's always nice when it happens that way, and sad when it does not. I am reminded of Sam's comment, is everything sad going to come untrue? And I'm still entirely suspicious of Mrs. Flood. Could it she be Susan? Ruby's love for the Doctor is going to make any future potential romantic partner's life rather difficult. Who could possibly live up to all that? Of course, she might fall for someone who works at UNIT or someone else who has met the Doctor before and would understand. I do you think that Ruby's romantically in love with the Doctor? Because I didn't read it like that at all.
No, I didn't read it like that at all. No.
If she was, she wouldn't be the first one, but...
Right. No, but I didn't get that at all, because I think, like, she was very happy for him in Rogue, except for the whole sending Rogue to an alternate dimension thing.
Right. Yeah, I don't think she's romantically in love with the Doctor. I just think she loves him as family. I think she sees him as a part of her family.
As someone who changed her life and showed her impossible things, yeah.
And who wouldn't have that love for the Doctor, right? And the Doctor not saying, I love you. As soon as Marilyn pointed that out at some point, I was like, oh. that has a long history, Marilyn.
Yeah.
You finished the David Tennant episodes.
Yeah. He might cry more, but he's still clearly got some issues to work through.
I kind of like that, though, right?
Yeah,
RTD didn't just wave a magic pie generation wand and get rid of all the trauma. RTD said, okay, he's healthier, but he's not healthy.
Right. He's still, I mean, this is some very serious trauma, and the worst of which he's inflicted on his granddaughter.
right.
His poor granddaughter. I can't believe he just locked her out of the TARDIS. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. You didn't know that before I said
no.
that? No. Sorry. He literally, like, locks the door, and she's on the other side like, grandfather, let me in.
Oh, my God.
It's pretty bad. All right. Athena A. says, I finished watching today, and I loved it. Ruby got a really nice story conclusion, and I love it when companions leave on their own terms, setting up some future suspense, which is nice as well. I don't think she's gone. I think this is the comment I replied to on the Discord where I said she's as gone as David Tennant.
No, it's confirmed. We've seen her on set. There's going to be, I guess, probably he'll pick up the new companion. Oh, I don't know. We know it's going to be Virata Sethu, but we don't know if she's playing the same character we saw her play in Boom this season, or if she's a different character.
I kind of hope it's the same character because she was very emotionally repressed, and I think that it would be healing for the doctor to help somebody through it, to help someone open up.
And then he realizes he's talking to himself. Yeah, I could see that. I liked that character. I would be happy for it to be her. And then I'm guessing they start with her and then like need to bring Ruby back in because of something with stuff that went on this season.
And then Nicola Coughlan comes in as Rogue. Claire from Dairy Girls and is like, can't you see? I can't do the dairy accent,
Did you watch the video I sent you?
I did. That was so good. That was so good. I showed my wife because she likes Dairy Girls a lot too. And she thought it was very funny. Should I watch Bridgerton now? Is that something I need to do now?
I mean, Bridgerton is fun. It is like a fun, you kind of turn your brain off, but it has like good human drama in it. And
we're watching Doctor Who.
Yeah, exactly.
We're turning our brains off already.
Yeah, I mean, I think Doctor Who has maybe a little more depth. Not really. Okay. I mean, there is a lot of Bridgerton is, it's like, it's a lot about like friendship and family and love, of course.
Well, all fun points, and I appreciate all the feedback. And this has been a really fun season, Alicia. I'm glad we ended up doing full coverage of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Even though now it's Hot Lore Summer is in full swing.
Oh, I'm stressed. But we're done with Doctor Who now. So congratulations. This is the first conclusion of Hot Lore Summer. Do I need to do the thing? Should I do it? All right, one more time.
In my head already. All right.
What a stupid sound I made. Anyway.
All right, but we got to come back after the Christmas special and talk about that.
Absolutely.
Our girl Claire / Penelope Bridgerton.
We will be back there. I want to remind everybody that we don't only cover Doctor Who. So if you found us on the Sonic Screwcast feed, fear not. We're covering House of the Dragon. David and I are doing that. You and I, Alicia, are doing the Star Wars Acolyte show, and that's going really well. And I know we're going to be doing some coverage of The Bear coming up.
Yeah. We have just a MC Universe episode releases tomorrow. We gave a funeral to the Fox Marvel Universe in preparation for Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yeah, that's fun. That's a fun premise. Is that the name of the episode? I didn't even look at the title yet. Oh, that's fun. That's fun. Plenty of other stuff. You did an interview with...
With Glenn Matsara?
I want to say Hugh Howie, and it's not.
No, it's not. But he did adapt a Hugh Howie book. Glenn Matsara, the co-showrunner of season 2 of Beacon 23. But we ended up having this really like deep conversation about showrunning in general. You know, he's also worked on The Walking Dead and Damien and all this other stuff. And really great conversation.
And you also have a new book club episode that out this week for people who subscribe to your Wolf Shift
Second
Dust
Shift.
Patreon.
Right. Second Shift. So, the second part of the book Shift, the second book in Silo. We are at the very center of the series now.
Very cool. On the Lorehounds feed, one other note, we have a couple Patreon Supercast exclusive podcasts this week. We had a hot take on Rhaenyra the Cruel. We had Shire Chats. should be out by the time this one goes public. And we're going to be doing Second Breakfast number 20 on Hotel Breakfast. So a lot going on the Patreon and Supercast feeds. Rings and Rituals is back this week with Chapter 8, Alloyed. That is the finale of Season 1 of Rings of Power. So if you're into that, please go over there. And Radioactive Ramblings is doing The Boys. They're doing Episode 4 of the new season this week. Properly Howard Movie Review just did a new episode. It was their finale of their season on Fellinis and Fugazis. I keep forgetting to write it down, though. It is Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon.
All right. I also have to shout out that next week on the Star Wars Complete Canon Timeline podcast, I'm doing a special episode looking at some Star Wars origin myths for the planet Batuu set in 30,000 years before the original movie. So watch out for that in the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast feed.
Very cool. All right. Very cool. All right. Alicia, can you give shout outs to our Discord server boosters and our top tier Patreon and Supercast subscribers, our lore masters?
Yes. So for our Discord server boosters, thank you, Gnarls, Aaron K, Tiller the Thriller, Dork of the Ninjas, Doove 71, Captain Gingy 56, and Athena Ajalea. And thank you also to our lore masters, especially Sam Martian, Michael G, Michelle E, David W, Brian P, SC, Peter OH, Bettina W, Adam S, Nancy M, Doove 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Eric F, Matthew M, Sarah M, DJ Miwa, Andre B, Kwang Yu, Jedi Jedi Bob, Nathan T, Alex V, Aaron T, Sub-Zero, Aaron K, Dali V, Mothership 61, sorry, Gnarls, Kathy W, our newest lore master. Thank you and welcome. And thank you to Stuart B, who just upgraded from Lorehound to Loremaster. And as always, last, Adrian.
All right, everyone. Thanks for traveling through time and space with us, and we will see you at Christmas.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Never mind the music, wherever you get your podcasts.
These days, I can do anything from my phone. Book a vacation, order a meal from a 5-star restaurant, buy and trade stocks. But maybe the most amazing thing I can do is make my dirty laundry disappear and then reappear perfectly washed and folded. I have Rinse to thank for that. I just schedule a pickup in the Rinse app or at Rinse.com. A Rinse valet comes to get my clothes, and before I know it, they're back, crisply folded and ready to wear. They even do dry cleaning, which is returned hanging in a nice Rinse garment bag. And with Rinse, my satisfaction is guaranteed. If for any reason I'm not happy, they'll re-clean my clothes for free. Best of all, Rinse saves me tons of time each week. That's time I get to do something I love versus something I have to do. So if you want to save loads of time by not doing loads of laundry, remember, there's an app for that. Rinse. Sign up now and get $20 off your first order at Rinse.com. That's Rinse.com.